One of the most relaxing parts of summer is lounging by the pool with a good book. Prepare for the beach and vacation season ahead with Smart Talk's annual program on books that you may enjoy this summer. We also welcome you to share your favorites and suggestions on today's program. We do this program at the beginning of every summer, and we know it's one of the most popular shows of the year where we recommend books to read this summer and like to hear your recommendations and questions as well. Joining us is Catherine Lawrence, owner of the Midtown Scholar Bookstore in Harrisburg. Catherine, I see you more than twice a year, but it's always good to see you in the studio.
Thanks so much, Scott.
Also joining us is Travis Karowski. He is an assistant professor of English and coordinator of creative writing at York College of Pennsylvania. Travis, same holds true with you. I see you twice a year.
It's true. Thanks, Scott. Happy to be here.
If you have a question or a comment, a suggestion, a recommendation, a question, give us a call. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Facebook, you can go to WITF Facebook page and make a recommendation or ask a question. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. You know, as I'm doing that introduction and I'm talking about lounging by the pool with a good book or being on the beach, you know, I probably should change that wording, because it's not just next to a body of water where we are enjoying a good book during the summer, is it?
Right, sure. Right. I've got suggestions if you're going hiking or walking around or any kind of summer travels, airplanes or trains.
Yeah, just because it's summer and you're not at the beach doesn't mean you stop reading. That's for sure.
Right, right. So many of my recommendations are meant for running on the rail trail or something this. Yeah.
Running.
Audiobooks.
Mm-hmm. Running. How about walking?
A little bit jogging, you know.
Okay.
Strolling.
All right. Okay. All right. I get it, Travis. All right. All right. Well, let's get right into it and some of the recommendations. By the way, you can see the recommendations of our panel on our website, WITF.org/smarttalk. We also have a list of books that NPR is recommending for this summer as well. So there's a whole lot there. Catherine, I'm going to start with you. The Tenth Muse by Catherine Chung. Tell me about it.
Yes, right. So for all you readers of historical fiction, if you liked All the Light We Cannot See, especially World War II era historical fiction, this is a great new book just about to be published next week as one of the featured titles of summer, called The Tenth Muse by Catherine Chung. And it's her second novel, actually. Her first one was about Korean families in the early 20th century. And this one is about a mathematician, a female mathematician with a Chinese immigrant mother and a white American father, but she doesn't really quite know the truth about them. And it's a double story, both of her work as a leading mathematician. I believe she's at MIT and is on a quest to conquer the Riemann hypothesis, the greatest unsolved mathematical problem of the day, but then also on a quest to solve her own mysterious history. And her father has left her just a handful of stories, including a sort of a journal that has secrets about what her early life was like and what her parents' life was like, that involves secrets buried in World War II Germany in the aftermath of when the Nazis were defeated. And so it's a revolving story in which, on the one hand, the narrator says, at the outset, I'm not going to tell my story in a straight line. I'm going to loop around. But on the other hand, the prose is very elegant, and so the story is almost the critics call it a traditional kind of tale with a very kind of classic narrative. So it's got a straight chronology, and yet it's looping around. So
what genre would you put that under? I can almost hear some mystery there, but
I'd say it's to me, who loves historical fiction, I will claim it for that.
Okay.
Because but I'm very embracing in that category, and so but it sounds like it's both a sort of a personal family mystery combined with the author weaves in many historical figures of the day. So yes, great historical fiction that has kind of double mysteries involved in the mathematical question to be solved and this the question of the heroine's own life to be solved. So.
And I see that Catherine Chung is going to be at Midtown Scholar in July as
well. Yes, she'll be here in about a month to talk about the book and how it came into being. She herself has an interesting biography, having studied mathematics at the University of Chicago at an advanced level, and yet this accomplished, elegant writer.
Travis, let's move on to your recommendations. On Earth, We're Briefly Gorgeous by Ocean Vuong.
Right. Sure. Ocean Vuong is most well known as a poet. This book came out, I think, on June 4th.
So it's new, too.
It is. It's very new. He launched himself onto the poet scene in 2016 with his debut poetry collection, Night Sky with Exit Wounds, and it felt like everybody was either reading that book or talking about the book. And actually, in that book, a book based on similar themes of immigrant life, of burgeoning homosexuality, of violence, there's actually a poem in there called On Earth, We're Briefly Gorgeous, which is the title of what we've learned is a debut novel from Ocean Vuong that just came out. The novel itself is, it's obviously a poet's novel. I love poets that write novels. One of my favorite novelists is Ben Lerner. I'm also a poet whose novel came out, his debut novel came out about a decade ago called Leaving Atocha Station. And there's something about how novelists, I think, how poets approach the novel. Ernest Hemingway, early 20th century and mid-20th century American novelist, said that writing a novel is hard, and the hard part about writing a novel is that it's writing poetry and prose, right? And I think there's this loveliness to every sentence that a poet puts into a novel, and you can see that in Ocean Vuong's book. So it tackles a lot of the same themes of Ocean himself grew up in Connecticut to Vietnamese immigrants, and he deals with all that subject matter in his poetry, and you can see those same themes erupt in sentences that are doing backflips and spinning metaphors and alliterations left and right. And I was actually worried coming into the novel because it's so dense and saturated with meaning and love that I thought there might not be much plot there. But if you stick with the novel, these plots of violence in Vietnam, of working in nail salons, of picking tobacco in rural Connecticut, and also the opioid crisis start to erupt as you read the novel. And it seems not just to be addressing these themes that this one writer is interested in, but what America is interested in today.
It's very contemporary, the 20th century. It's
intensely contemporary, and it goes places that I didn't expect the novel to go. And it's very much more plot-heavy and driven as a narrative than I expected this young poet to write on. It's a beautiful, it's a heartbreaking, heart-wrenching book. It's written as a love letter to a mother, much like, I think, Ocean's own mother, who doesn't speak and read English in the way that the author himself can. And so he's writing this letter, this confessional letter, about his own experiences, about the experiences of violence and drug addiction, to a mom that might never read that letter. And it's really, really touching just to read such a letter that the recipient might not read themselves.
Well, you two don't believe in light reading on the beach, do you?
That looks on our staff's top pick for the summer, too. It looks to be great. And as you see, another benefit of a poet's book that is a novel is it's slim, and also, as you were saying, Travis,
short.
That something about the richness of the language that makes it worth just delving into and reflecting on. So I'm all for the beach thriller, too, but this is a nice counterpart.
And that's not no judgment. I'm just joking with you. But one thing that the two of you have done, and I just love it, is that you've brought books along with you. Even though it's radio and that the listeners can't see it, the pile of books in front of the two of you is just real impressive. It's great. It adds to the whole background of our show today. So, by the way, we are looking for your recommendations or questions you may have about some books that you'd like to read this summer. Give us a call, 1-800-729-7532, or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. We did receive an email with a recommendation even before the show. Tara sent this. The Scoundrels of Skagway by Martin Stroud, a coming-of-age adventure set in Alaska. Great summer read. It's only available on Kindle and Amazon right now, but it's for tweens and young adults. Familiar with The Scoundrels of Skagway?
Not specifically. Other books like that. similarly titled for teen adventure fiction.
Well, you know, that's, and again, we do this before the holidays when we, you know, we do this where we have recommendations for holiday gift giving with books. But also, the summer, always have to remember that students in school are off. And yes, their parents would love to see them read a book. So for those who are under the age of 18, make some recommendations as well. And I know the two of you do that as well. Catherine, a book that I interviewed the author just last week, and he appeared at the bookstore over the weekend, David Epstein's Range. David Epstein, a best-selling author. And the book, if you didn't hear the interview on Friday, recommend you go back and take a listen to it. Recommend that you read the book. It goes against everything that we've been taught growing up about specializing and how you become really good at one thing by specialization, and that's not what this book is about.
Right, this sort of counterintuitive approach to really to embrace failure as a way to learn and redirect your energies, and how many of those who are most successful have actually tried many things before they find the passion unite with the skill that really takes off to something in which there is excellence that comes about. We had a great interview with him. We enjoyed your Smart Talk podcast with him, and then he came this week into the bookstore, and it was actually our first filmed interview in-house, so we hope to have that on our new YouTube channel coming soon for those who missed getting to come by to the bookstore.
Well, the very first chapter of the book kind of encapsulizes everything. Tiger Woods versus Roger Federer.
Right.
Tiger Woods was a prodigy from the time he was born. It was obvious that he would be a great golfer. And his father didn't encourage him. I mean, he encouraged him, but he didn't say, you have to play golf. He just wanted to all the time. He became the best in the world. Roger Federer's mother was a tennis coach, and he didn't want to play tennis. He played soccer. He played all kinds of other sports. He would talk about pro wrestling with his friends. Then when he got to be a little bit older, he started playing tennis, and he became the best in the world. Point being, two world-class athletes who took different paths. And David Epstein says that Federer probably took the path that most people should or would be more successful with.
Right.
So, Travis, we speak for ourselves. A word from Forgotten Black America by Dee Watkins.
Right. So Dee is a Baltimore writer. He lives in Baltimore. He's actually our York College 2020 writer in residence coming up. So I've been reading through. Yeah, I'm really excited about it. He was recommended by one of our alums, Michael Tagger, who actually lives in Baltimore as well and went to graduate school with Dee. And he sent up, hey, if you're looking for any writers to bring up, check out this guy. Checked him out, and I was blown away by both the personal nature and the passion of what he writes. So this is We Speak for Ourselves came out, I think, about a month ago. It's his latest. I think it's his third book. His first book came out about 4 years ago, called The Beast Side, which is Baltimore East Side. And each of his books are slight memoirs, collections of essays, which deal with growing up impoverished in urban East Side Baltimore, selling drugs, and sort of the inner city violence and sort of institutionalized racism that happens in America. But when Dee talks about it, he always talks about it from personal experience. He's relating to people he knows, people whose experience he can communicate through the voice that he's been given as an author. And a lot of it kind of culminates from what I see his themes and his interest in this latest book, We Speak for Ourselves. The idea when We Speak for Ourselves is Dee himself has seen people speaking for impoverished black Americans, that he feels like the impoverished people might be able to speak on these issues better. He watches television pundits, educated people speaking for, and he thinks against or over people that, like himself, he feels like want to speak for ourselves. So he has this great quote from the brilliant scholar. He says, brilliant scholar and activist, Dr. Suad Abdul Kabir, "You don't need to be a voice for the voiceless, just pass the mic," which is what the book is. The book is a long kind of polemic, but a really personal one, based in Dee's own experience about how the voiceless needs to be given a voice as opposed to be spoken for. Mm.
It's relatively new, too, just
it came out about a month ago,
okay.
Yeah. And so he's doing the circuit. He stopped by Midtown Scholar. You can listen to, if you go back on your podcast screen through Midtown Scholar bookstores, podcast, I think it came out about a month ago. And he's kind of making his way around the nation talking about this book and these issues.
Mm. We're going to have some of your recommendations coming up in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. I want to tell you about some of the programs that we have coming up in the near future. Later this week, Pennsylvania's Auditor General Eugene D. Pasquale joins us. He recently did an audit of the Pennsylvania Game Commission that actually had surprised a lot of people with the money at the Game Commission. We'll be talking about that a little bit later this week. We invite you to participate in the program. If you can't call in during the program, what you can do is share your questions in advance by sending us a voice memo or leaving voicemail. See what's coming up at WITF.org/smarttalk. Today is our annual program, Summer Reading, books that are recommended or suggested for your summer reading, whether it's on the beach, in the mountains, even in your home, just curled up with a good book. Any place you can read a good book, we have some recommendations for you. Our guest today, Catherine Lawrence, owner of Midtown Scholar Bookstore in Harrisburg, Travis Kurowski, an assistant professor of English and coordinator of creative writing at York College of Pennsylvania. And again, we'd like to hear from you. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's go to the phone. Heather is in Lingolstown. Heather, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a lot of friends that right now their kids are getting ready to go to college, just finished up high school, and they're having a tough time with it. And all of my kids are out. And I wish I would have read this book before they left, because it's a great book. It's called Release My Grip by Cami Gilmore. It's a smaller book, so it, like, I think I sat down and I read it in 6-7 hours. Mm. I couldn't put it down. And it just talks about, you know, you doing your job as a parent, and now it's time to kind of let them go, and it's okay. And they're going to make mistakes, and it's okay. And you can do this, and you've done your job. And I think as parents, it's always so difficult to kind of let go and release your grip. And I've recommended it. I've actually bought the book and given it away to so many people, and I just think it's a great book for parents that are going through that journey.
Well, Heather, thank you very much for your call, and her timeliness is perfect when, yes, the school year just ended, but there are a lot of families that will be experiencing this in the next few months. Are you familiar with the book?
No, but I have a college freshman. I wrote the book down.
Yes. Well, as someone who is in a classroom in college, do you ever notice that? You're looking at it from a student point of view, but a lot of first-year students that are out of a high school classroom, away from their parents for the first time?
Oh, sure. And we have a lot of this issue in college. And there's other books like this, too, about kind of dealing with your student going away and moving away, and sort of how we're kind of continuing that parental relationship even well into, I think, the early 20s of our kids these days in America. So, yeah, certainly the parents are still very invested in their college freshmen, sophomores, juniors,
you don't have
and
any
seniors.
Helicopter parents?
No, we call them bulldozer parents now, I think.
Oh, but, well,
or snowplow, really? Right? Or where you move away the obstacles from your kids so they don't have to deal with them. That's a new term.
I learned that. Okay.
So my recommendation for the teens and the parents is Dear Evan Hansen as a book. It's based on the Broadway hit musical that won Tony Awards in years past. And it is really about a high school senior who is really at sea as he begins his senior year, and has a close friend who commits suicide, and then how he and his friends in the school really react to that and make their mission to care for one another in a sort of answer to that, but there are, I don't know, I don't want to be a spoiler with the plot, which you may already know.
Travis, you look like you want to jump in on that.
No, I won't. Yeah, no, but my 9-year-old's been playing this on repeat, and my daughter, when she was junior and senior, listened to this musical constantly. It's a beautiful, beautiful musical.
It's just emotionally moving story that has as much to tell parents as it does to teach kids, so I recommend it for family reading for the summer.
Right, it's as much as a mother's journey in that story.
Let's go to our emails now. What do we have here? Margot Vigent. This is Fred's sister. Fred Vigent, our program director, his sister. And we're good to see that. It's good to see that the family members are listening to the program, too. She recommends Lent by Joe Walton, Fall or Dodge in Hell by Neal Stephenson, Wanderers by Chuck Wendig, and the Yiddish Policeman's Union as part of Life's Library Book Club. It's good to see that one member of that family reads anyway. So those books?
Oh, those are just a wide assortment of books. Chuck Wendig is a witty, somewhat foul-mouthed, but incredibly sharp, cynical, funny writer.
I just like the title of that book.
That's just a classic of contemporary fiction. So, yeah, those would be a great... That's a really diverse shelf.
It is. I mean, that's one of the reasons... I'm glad to see that Margot had four different titles there, but they were very diverse. Scott Blanchard, everyone's getting involved here, our staff even. Scott Blanchard, State Impact Pennsylvania editor, recommends on summer reading recommendations. I'd love to hear you recommend the Mueller Report. Can't say it reads like a beach thrower, but it's so important, something everyone should read. Is that available for sale?
There are multiple editions available. There's a one with a Republican's introduction, one with a Democrat's introduction, and one that is just a generic to go to all sides in its introduction. So, yes, right there, it's kind of mass market paperback size, and it's been on our front counter selling by the stacks.
That was my next question, whether people are buying it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to take away from any book sales, but you can download the audiobook version for free as well, which I just did. I haven't put that on for a run yet.
But. There are many pages that are redacted. Our staff has been making amused comments on how, you know, I don't know how that works in the audio version, but they're blacked out redacted pages, and that's included.
Yeah,
I am
curious how they would do redactions on audio. Sharon in Harrisburg just finished reading Once More We Saw Stars by Jason Green. It's a new memoir written by the father of a 2-year-old girl who died in a freak accident. It chronicles the struggle of him and his wife over an 18-month period to find their new normal. Although it is a profoundly sad book, at times it is truly a story of hope and redemption, one of the best nonfiction books I've read in years. Familiar with the book?
I am. I mean, that we were just talking actually about one of the kind of sadder kind of genres or topics to read is about young children dying. But yeah, that's been a lot of kind of best book lists or best reads list of 2019. It sounds heartbreaking.
Let's see. We have Amanda recommending The Alice Network by Kate Quinn. Familiar with that?
Sure. Part of the World War II era historical fiction, and that is one of the best new releases out there in the last year or two. There's really a burgeoning genre of that specific type of story, so there are many other similar works to follow up on those lines.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phone. Jody is in Columbia. Jody, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well. So are our guest, I think.
I have just finished reading the new Churchill biography by Andrew Roberts called Churchill Walking with Destiny. It's a mammoth read. It's almost 1,000 pages, but it reads like a narrative. You see all sides of this man that most of us only get from history books, you know, or miniseries. The depth and the complexities and the multifaceted personality of Churchill is fascinating. This book is better than I thought it would be. I was a little daunted by it at first, but I highly recommend it to anybody who likes history and really wants to get, I like the story behind a story. I love nonfiction.
Yeah, and Jody, I think it's a rule that if you write about Churchill, the book has to be at least 1,000 pages. But
well, he wrote many pages himself.
Oh, yeah.
He was an incredible author.
Well, I just, you know, I was in London a month ago and visited the Churchill War Rooms below. And, I mean, there's a museum there that if you've read the book, you probably would enjoy the museum as well, because it covers Churchill not just during World War II, but from, you know, his early life all the way up through the time he left as Prime Minister of Britain. So, yeah, any kind of, you know, there's a lot of, well, Jody, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
There is so much interest this summer, we know, because of the 75th anniversary of D-Day. Churchill, Roosevelt, Eisenhower, just the whole history, the 75th anniversary, I think is generating a lot more interest.
Right. Well, I think it's been going on from the publishing perspective for the last several years now. There's been just a real resurgence both in histories and in fictional works. I've got one of my top picks still to look for in July. It's not yet out, but it'll be published on July 2nd, is an oral history of World War II Russian children. That is, so I don't have any big biographies on my list for you this time. And I also don't have, usually sometimes I come with like a new edition of Dostoevsky or Tolstoy for the readers who want a big fat book to carry with them all summer. So I don't have that, but by the award-winning Russian translators, a couple, Richard Pivyar and Larissa Volokonsky, hopefully I got that right, who have translated all of those works by Dostoevsky and Tolstoy and others. They have at last turned their attention to this incredible nonfiction work of oral history by a Nobel Prize winning historian, Svetlana Alexievich, called The Last Witnesses, an oral history of the children of World War II. And so these stories have been told and shared in Russian historical documents and oral histories and for some time, and now at last they're available in English, or will be July 2nd, in what's going to be a very eloquent translation. So for any of your nonfiction World War II buffs, we often look at it from the British side, from the American side, and this is part of, I think there's actually a turn, there are more books coming out this fall that are also about the experience of, say, Jews in World War II Russia, which is not something we normally think about. So
well, that's,
lots coming
that,
out.
You know, that's something that I think history buffs, you're right. I mean, let's face it, the Soviet Union, now, even though it's been over 25 years since the fall of the Soviet Union, many of these documents are just becoming available that historians can get their hands on. And that is not a point of view that you hear very often in the history of World War II, is from the Soviet or from the Russian point of view. So, yeah, that sounds like it would be an interesting book. Mm-hmm. But the same with, I've said this before, but one of the things I find most fascinating is, you know, these are stories from 75 years ago and more that we still learn. There's still things to learn about them.
Right.
I mean, like Winston Churchill, I joked about 1,000 pages long. You'd think you'd know everything about Winston Churchill by this point, but here we are, 3/4 of a century later, and you're still learning about Winston Churchill. And, you know, that I think that's one of the things that we get in history books today, is that you still get those behind the scenes, those insights that you haven't read in your school textbooks.
Right. I think some of it's about not always learning new things, but telling the story differently,
right,
I think,
right,
a little bit.
Right.
I think I like how Svetlana, what she won the Nobel Prize for and what she's known for, is what Dee Watkins is talking about, is giving voice to the voiceless, right? Instead of someone else telling the story about what happened to the Russians in this period or that period, she went and interviewed, you know, impoverished women and other people. And this is right up her alley. I'm really, really excited about this book.
Mm-hmm. Travis, you know, we've talked about hearing some of these authors, which, and I have to say from experience that It brings a whole other perspective to it when you actually can get to hear the author speaking about the book or speaking about the subject that they're writing about. Good Omens by Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman.
Yep.
Neil Gaiman. And then American Gods by Neil Gaiman. You recently saw Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, a former student, Luke Kowick, drug me out, thankfully, to New Brunswick to see Neil Gaiman speak on May 31st, which... He bought the tickets a year ago and ended up just being the day that Neil Gaiman's new show on Amazon Prime, Good Omens, had just launched that day. And so Neil had been up for a couple days doing, you know, parties in London and here because of the launch. And so he didn't expect to be talking to an audience of 700 fans in New Brunswick on the same time that his show was launching. So it was a really, really special experience. The show Good Omens is based on the novel written by Terry Pratchett, who passed away a few years ago, and Neil Gaiman together. Neil Gaiman is probably the most prolific and award-winning fantasy novelist out there today. His biggest book is American Gods. I watched the show Good Omens, which is... It's essentially a story of the Antichrist told hilariously through...
Boy, that sounds like a good reason. I mean, it's for humor. I mean, why not start there?
Why not? Yeah, if anything, Neil Gaiman knows a good story when he hears it. And it's told from the perspective of an angel and a demon who've been around since the beginning of time, which is 4,000 years ago, kind of having to deal with it. And they become best friends and trying to fix everything. It's a hilarious read. Neil Gaiman read... about 20 or 30 minutes to us, to a captivated, boisterous, you know, laughing audience. And so I couldn't wait to watch a show. I binged it after I saw him read from the book because he was such an engaging speaker and engaging reader. Also, Neil Gaiman does most, if not all, of his own audiobooks as well. So if you buy an audiobook of one of his novels, he's usually the one reading it. The one I'm listening to now as I'm running American Gods, which came out, I think, in 2006 or something like that, is like a 700-page novel about the new gods versus the old gods. The new gods are like technology, celebrity, strip malls, the old gods are Odin and what have you, right? And they're sort of battling over America and the future. It's fascinating. I'm really loving every bit of it. It's actually, the audiobook I bought was a 10th anniversary edition, which is a full cast. And that's kind of a new thing they're doing for audiobooks, where they get a lot of great actors together and read the book. One I really enjoyed a couple years ago was A Handmaid's Tale, which did that thing fantastically well.
We have more recommendations from listeners. Joyce recommends A Ladder to the Sky by John Boyne, tale of the literary world with an unscrupulous writer. Never hated a character in a book this much. Great story, very well written. See, that goes against what you normally hear, too, because usually you want to like a character, but Joyce says, never hated a character in a book this much. Familiar with it?
Not specifically, but the concept of having a character who is imperfect, it makes for much better book club discussions. So I would agree with that on principle.
Well, are there perfect characters in books anymore? I mean, everybody's imperfect, right?
Right. I do think that is a way to engage the reader more successfully.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. To Smart Talk. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we're going to be talking about family leave. There's legislation here in Pennsylvania that addresses family leave. That is our topic for tomorrow's show, so be sure to tune in. Today, we're talking about books and books that you would enjoy this summer. A lot of great recommendations and suggestions from listeners as well. Our guest, Travis Kurowski, an assistant professor of English and coordinator of creative writing at York College of Pennsylvania, and Catherine Lawrence, owner of the Midtown Scholar Bookstore in Harrisburg. And again, we'd like to hear from you. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. We have a different Joyce here. She recommends An Invisible Thread by Schaff and Trzesniewski. Familiar?
I'm not.
No, she doesn't say a whole lot more about the book, but An Invisible Thread. Maybe one of our producers can look that up and give us a little bit of background on An Invisible Thread by Schaff and Trzesniewski. Let's see. We have Ben, who is recommended, just finished two books, The Dead and Those About to Die on D-Day, the big red one, at Omaha Beach by John McManus. Not usually a fan of historical narratives in this genre, but this particular work is really engaging and also has implicit lessons on leadership, duty, and patriotism. And also, Alienated America, Why Some Places Thrive While Others Collapse by Timothy Carney examines communities in the U.S. that are succeeding in comparison with those that are struggling through the lens of the 2016 presidential election, written by a scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. That Alienated America, Why Some Places Thrive While Others Collapse reminds me of the conversation we had just a few months ago.
Yes.
Remember?
Yes, we've had several authors who have explored that same issue from differing perspectives, and I think it is an ongoing. We're still trying as a culture to help to connect urban and suburban and rural differences of different ways of understanding our political system and how communities work very differently in rural versus urban areas. Mm. Mm.
Catherine, one of the books that you recommend for young adult readers, On the Come Up by Angie Thomas.
Right, and this is a sequel to her best-selling
And she's work, holding the book, by the way.
The Hate U Give, right? This is my daughter's top recommendation for high schoolers. And I think it also works well very much with the D. Watkins sense of speaking of how otherwise unempowered people may need to take the mic for themselves. And this is also in the grain of music fiction, which is a thing, really. And so the heroine is wants to be one of the greatest rappers of all time, and she's the daughter of a hip-hop legend who has died. Her father was cut off early. And how does she make her way in the world? And her sibling stories, her friendships, and just making her way through the world in incredibly elegant and captivating prose to, you know, hold the teen on the edge of her seat as one reads it, or the parent too, and yet have this really powerful and compelling message about speaking your mind and making your own way in the world. So yes, highly recommend that.
Well, Travis, I'm looking down at your list, and this isn't necessarily for young adults, even though it could be. This could be for any age group, but several here. X-Men Grand Design, the series by Ed Pisker. Marvels by Kurt Busiek and Alex Ross. And Spider-Man Life Story by Chip Zdarsky and Mark Bagley.
Sure, and I do appreciate you saying these books aren't just for kids.
Well, of course,
we know of the $2 trillion or whatever dollars Avengers Endgame has made. I put these books on there because I think this is the same thing I think with any media, music, film, books. After you finish something, if you love it a lot, usually you want a little bit more after it. After I watched Endgame, of course, what did I do? I went and watched it a couple more times in the theater. But after spending, 12 or 14 hours in the cinema, you want to do something else with your life. So I wanted to go back to comics. I've been bringing my daughters to the comic book store more since watching the movie, and kind of see what was out there and what else I can engage in, both in the comics and in the superhero kind of narrative. I was really enjoying with what Marvel's done for the past 15 or so years. And so these are three books that I wanted to put on their book series that I thought give readers a lot of the same stuff, a lot of kind of fan service and engagement with the superhero genre that the Avengers movies and the Iron Man movies and whatnot kind of gave us. So Marvels by Busiek and Ross is arguably the book that started this sort of like nostalgia for what superheroes are and what they mean for us. It's a retelling of the early Marvel comic books from the mid-20th century from the perspective of a reporter on the ground. So it's a person just like you and me, just occasionally kind of seeing these superheroes in life, but essentially going through the reporter's own life with his family, struggles on the job and what have you. And it's a really cool way to go through it. Marvel is just now re-releasing these books in annotated editions. You can see why Ross and Busiek made the choices panel to panel and what they're alluding to and what have you, right? Mm-hmm. Which we all did with Endgame, seeing, that section was referencing this Iron Man movie and this Captain America movie or whatnot. And then The Spider-Man books is now being released now, Spider-Man Life Story. I think they're on issue 3 or 4. And it's going back and re-politicizing the Spider-Man origin story and sort of the decades of his life with Gwen Stacy and MJ Parker, and introducing it to the subjects of like the Vietnam War and things that were often ignored in the original stories. And then finally, lastly, the X-Men Grand Design. Ed Piskor became famous for going through hip-hop history and retelling those stories of the early hip-hop artists in New York City and L.A. through the form of comics, and actually in the four-color sort of pulp comics. If you read this early hip-hop history, which only came out a few years ago from Ed Piskor, it looks like you're reading a comic book from the 1960s and has this sort of like classic kind of nostalgic sort of feel, which I think really mixes well with the music and the stories being told. He's got hired by Marvel to go back comic book by comic book, decade by decade, the story of the X-Men, which is kind of a fan favorite of feeling like a weirdo and feeling like left out of these mutants sort of finding their way in the world. It's Wolverine, it's Cyclops, it's Phoenix. And so if you're going and watching The Dark Phoenix now, or you're a fan of those comics or want to kind of experience sort of Ed Piskor's really brilliant storytelling and design work in the medium, I'd really recommend checking that out, and you can go through the decades of X-Men history.
You know, I see that as kind of a multimedia look at it, that I'm sure that often when there's a blockbuster movie out that, you know, started as a book, started in this case in comic books, that it renews interest in those. And it's good to see that, you know, someone who, I don't think you're like our normal reader or viewer, but that a lot of people, most people, I think, once they see the film, they're interested in the books as well. And, you know, so you get a little bit of more background there on it as well. Let's go to the phone. Connie is in York. Connie, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I'm promoting a book that I think is one that you would be proud to own. You couldn't carry it to the beach or to your pool, but it is a book that would help you to understand the whaling history of our country. The book is called O'er the Wide and Trackless Sea. It is written by a York College student, Michael Dyer, curator of maritime history at the New Bedford Whaling Museum. And it includes the drawings and paintings of representations of the whale hunt, rarely, if ever, seen by the public. But these illustrations and manuscripts from the logbooks have been brought into view in this book. And it is an absolutely beautiful, handsome book. And it would be one that I think Americans would want to study.
So, Connie, you say it's not a book that you would take to the beach. I'm picturing a book that, with these illustrations and pictures, that is pretty big?
It's large.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for your recommendation, Travis, your college student.
Well, and New Bedford Whaling Museum, I love and highly recommend, if you haven't been there, make a summer trip. New Bedford has its own summer weekend folk festival, and the Whaling Museum is a great place, very interactive, user-friendly. It becomes part of the folk festival. You'll hear old-style musicians telling yarns, just like you would have in seafaring times. So that's a great place to visit, as well as maybe book to get when you're there.
You know, the use of language that the two of you have. I talked about the Churchill 1,000 pages, yarns. You have to be telling old stories if you're telling yarns.
Right. And they're singing them there, like sea shanties.
I've never been there, but I've been to Mystic Seaport,
right.
And I picture it as being kind of similar.
Right, very similar.
Yeah. Let's go to Sharon in Hershey. Sharon, you're on the air.
What a wonderful talk. I have a book I love dearly. It's a couple years old, called Lincoln in the Bardo, and that's Bardo. It's the place that souls go when in the in-between, before they've moved on. And it's each header of each chapter is based on a historical fact, document, or quote. And it's about the time when Lincoln would go late night, President Lincoln, to the cemetery to hold Willie, to open up the borrowed little tomb that they had him in. And since he was one of the first people to be embalmed in the history of the Civil War, the child's body stayed intact for quite a while, and he would go for weeks at night after work on one horse, one guard, and there's documents, each chapter head, about what he did, how he did, but it's told from the perspective of the people in the cemetery who've been there, not quite sure why they're there. It's the dead bodies. And they're in sick boxes, they call it. The coffins are called sick boxes in their mind. And it's sad and weird and lyrical and wonderful. And it reaches out to common humanity. The people in the bardo or the in-between are losing their humanity. And when they see a grief-stricken father holding a dead son, nobody touches them anymore. Their bodies are not being touched. So they're all drawn to follow this man on his repeated visit, because nobody visits cemeteries late at night. It's a wonderful book. Have you heard of it? It's won many awards.
Lincoln in the Bardo.
So that's George Saunders'
Lincoln in the Bardo.
Booker-wise prize-winning novel.
It's heartbreaking, but lyrical.
We're all clapping for it here. We all love that book. And he came to the bookstore and is a fantastic speaker. And so that is a novel that your listener has described. And yet, basically deeply imagined and with a fascinating way of sort of literally unfurling these multiple stories and points of view. So highly recommended. I don't always think of it as a ghost story, which it really is.
It is,
and
yeah.
I meant to add a ghost story collection, because I think, oh, my youngest son, that's what he wants to read this summer. In which, so I think I would say Roald Dahl has a ghost stories collection that that your tween readers or adults might want to turn to.
Are these ghost stories? Or
no.
Not that ghosts are true. Or, you know,
well,
there are ghosts.
Well, it's a classic collection of ghost stories from Roald Dahl, that sense of magic and twisted fate.
Speaking of Lincoln, Joe Rota recommends his own book, Abraham Lincoln and Making of a Case, The Story of a Master. I've had several listeners recommend. Joe is from Lancaster County. Having Joe on the program, actually, what the book is about is Lincoln as an attorney, how good of a lawyer that he was. So, Joe, I'll say it right on the air. Sometime we will have you on the air. I just haven't gotten around to getting you scheduled, but we will have you on the air to talk about that. Let's see. An invisible thread. Ask the question, and my producers help us out here. An invisible thread tells of the lifelong friendship between a busy sales executive and a disadvantaged young boy, and how both of their lives were changed by what began as one small gesture of kindness. So that sounds like a good premise for a book, too. Bill called to say that he went to school with Mike Dyer and agrees the book, Over the Wide and Trackless Sea, is a great book by a great author who he went to school with and is a York College alum.
Yeah, I was really excited to hear about that. And if anyone else is interested, I found a 2016 York Daily Record profile of Michael Dyer, which goes through his whaling knowledge and how he's done the research for the books and whatnot. But it sounds like a really, really exciting project.
We only have about 2 minutes left, and we'll try to hit on a couple more books. Catherine, Nature Lovers Rejoice. You headlined this, The Secret Wisdom of Nature by Peter Wohlleben. And our audience, very much into nature, so I'm sure this is a book they'd like.
Well, you probably heard, or they might have heard, of The Hidden Life of Trees, which was the first by Peter in this series, and then he had a second, and then this is the final part of the trilogy, The Secret Wisdom of Nature, and it turns his same vision and perspective onto the broader phenomenon of, you know, why do coniferous forests make it rain? How do trees affect the rotation of the earth? So you not just have the trees themselves, but how they play into the systems of the world. So that's great for your nature lovers. Everyone will be pleased to have that third one in the series. For other nature lovers, I have my classic poetry for you to take on your walks. Sometimes I recommend Wordsworth or what have you, but this year I will recommend Edna St. Vincent Millay. For those who want to reflect on cemeteries. There are many passages there, but there are also good ones for beach walks and mountain lanes and great reflective poetry, which is this what's in my backpack this summer.
Well, I want to thank both of you for being with us. Great list of recommendations. And I want to tell our audience as well that we have links to the guest lists, and we are creating a list that the listeners can contribute to as well. This program, when we do this show, for days afterwards, we still have people who are making recommendations and suggestions. So, and if you're looking for a good book to read, go to our website, witf.org/smarttalk, and you can see that list. Travis Kurowski and Catherine Lawrence, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks so much, Scott.
Thank you, Scott. Really enjoyed it.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, we talk about family leave. Have yourself a good day.